The truth is, most women have the same limiting beliefs around money. It's not like a crayon box with like 250 crayons in it. It's like we're talking about 5 crayons and we're all coloring with the same ones, which is like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not good at it. Men are better at it. I'm not sure. And who am I?
Well, let's just spell a little of that right now, because you're right. And the reason yes. that we all think that way is because that's how we've been educated. So articles that are written, traditionally articles that are written for us about money, tell us how to be good savers and that investing yes. is scary. But articles that are written for men tell them how to invest and grow their wealth, right?
Hello and welcome back to the Joyous Path to Millions podcast with me, your host, Emily June Wilcox, multi-7-figure CEO, serial entrepreneur, and creator of the Money Wound Medicine program. I'm really excited for today's episode because anytime I get a chance to talk to women who have been playing the money game for a long time and playing it in different ways than the way that I have, it's like such a great opportunity. I love picking people's brains. I love just seeing how money has evolved over time. Salaries have evolved, access to capital. And today on the show, I have Janine Firpo. And Janine is a seasoned value-aligned investor and social innovator. She had a 35-year career in tech that we'll talk about a little bit. She's written a book called Activate Your Money and Invest to Grow Your Wealth and Build a Better World, which is so aligned to all of us here on the Joyous Path to Millions. And Janine also chairs the board of Zebras Unite, which is an organization that is developing capital structures, community, and culture that non-unicorn startup businesses need to thrive. So I'm super excited to talk about all of these things. Janine, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be in conversation with you about money, which is so important, particularly for women.
It is. And to me, like when I read your bio, it sounds like you're such a trailblazer in an industry that's been so male dominated. Like tech is still, I feel like, quite male dominated. And if we rewind 35 years, I can only imagine what that was like. Can you kind of give us some insights?
Oh, my Lord. You're right. You're right. I mean, I was a programmer. So that's how I started out. I was a coder. And I was always the only woman in the room, always. And yeah. interestingly enough, I loved coding. It was really, really fun. But I had a particular job at one point, and the company needed somebody who could be a spokesperson, who could come out with the technology knowledge and talk to potential customers. And I'm the one they chose because I always dressed professionally. I wasn't in the t-shirt with yesterday's pizza on the front of it. I was like, always dressed professionally, and I knew how to articulate and simplify difficult technology concepts in a way that just a consumer, a possible customer would understand. So the fact that they did that with me actually led me into a completely different realm in my career. And I left mm-hmm. program behind, got very involved in product development and customer support and a whole bunch of other things. But it also lent really well to the work I do now around money, because when I wrote my book, I am not a financial professional. I've learned what I know through experimentation myself and paying a lot of attention to the financial markets. But I wanted to be really clear about how different asset classes work and give people really deep information. And so rather than doing all the research myself, being a woman and collaborative, I reached out to a bunch of my friends who were financial professionals. And they wrote the early versions of the book. And I asked them to make it really simple, which they thought as professionals they were doing, but it wasn't. So I had to rewrite everything that they wrote, make it even easier to understand and to have the whole book have a single voice. So that skill that I learned 30 some years ago served very well even now.
I love that you're touching on something. Women naturally tend to be very collaborative. And when you look at our roots and our origins, that's like one of our survival skills and our coping mechanism is to tap into the gifts of others and find ways to work together. And it's, I think, one of many, many, many important reasons why We need gender representation at all levels inside of all industry. To me, I wonder, hearing you talk about like, oh, well, I was a programmer and I was like the only woman. Was there a part of you that had like a little bit of rebelliousness or just, I don't know. I'm wondering if you just felt like, I don't believe in the rules. And if I can excel in this one place where I don't see any other women, then maybe I can apply that to these other spaces as well.
Well, I think what happened with me is I've always been driven by something. I've always had an inner drive to do things. And a lot of the things that I was drawn to were not things that women did. Like I was a scuba diver 40 plus years ago when women didn't scuba dive. I was always the only woman in the group. And so what I learned was if I wanted to do the things that I wanted to do, I just had to take a deep breath, swallow hard, and step into very uncomfortable places to be able to do what I wanted. And then I had to work to make those places comfortable. So that's just been something I've always done. Early in my career, I mean, I started my career actually in New Orleans. That's a whole nother story. But when I started my career back in the early 80s, I had to dress like a man, a female version of a man. I wore the suits with a skirt instead of pants. I had to have some sort of a little flower or a little bow or something at my neck to resemble a tie. That was required attire for women in business. And I learned that I had to act like a man as well in many ways in order to be successful. And one of the things that made me really happy, and I had some very, very blatant sexual stuff, sexist stuff happened to me early in my career. But over time, things softened. Women didn't have to dress that way. It got a lot easier in the workplace. And in my last job, I spent about 20 years. I started telecommuting in 1991 before it was a thing. In fact, I was working at Apple Computer and I wanted to telecommute one day a week and they wouldn't let me. So I quit my job and started telecommuting and spent the next 20 years doing that. And then my last job was with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I had to go back into an office setting. And I had thought all of this gender-related stuff was gone. And I realized even though things had softened, it wasn't gone. It had just morphed from stuff that was really blatant into things that were much more insidious because they were small and it wasn't possible to point to any one thing and say, see, that's it. It is the accumulation of these small things over day after day after day. And that was rather disheartening to me to see that, right? But I want to go back to what you said about collaboration too, because in terms of finance and what I've learned about women, collaboration isn't only important to us in the way we work in the world. We also like to be together to learn. And so I just read something the other day, in fact, that pointed to this and pointed to the fact that as we're learning about money, the way that we have traditionally been taught to do this, it's a solitary thing. You know, men go out, they learn this on their own. Sometimes they'll talk to their buddies about money, but basically they do it themselves. And that's kind of the ethos of how we're supposed to learn, but it doesn't have to be. We can actually learn in community and it's much more powerful. And after I wrote my book, I joined forces with another woman named Ellen Remmer. And in 2021, the two of us co-founded a nonprofit called Invest for Better. And the purpose of Invest for Better is to put women into small groups, give them voice, enable them maybe for the first time ever, for many of them, to actually have a place to talk to other women about their money, a safe place for women to ask the questions that they're afraid to ask in company of men, to be vulnerable, to share. And so we've been running that now for a couple of years, and we've had about 1,000 women go through our training, and we're teaching them how to be confident investors and investors who put their money to work for a better world at the same time.
I'm obsessed with that. We'll make sure that we've got that linked up because I have a feeling that a lot of folks listening to this podcast are going to be interested. And it feels very complimentary to the work that I do because I find that if we're not in spaces where we talk about money, then what happens is all of the limiting beliefs that we have, we just see that as truth. Like, oh, I'm just bad with money. I don't know how to handle it. Who am I to get rich? It's hard to make a lot of money. If we never say those things out loud, then they just live as truth inside of our heads and inside of our body. What happens is that when we put ourselves in community and we put ourselves in spaces where there's talk about money and it feels safe to voice those scary things, what you'll have reflected to you is, that's not true. Wait, why do you think that way? And for the first time, you'll start to question this identity and have an opportunity to work through it. And it's like, the truth is, most women have the same limiting beliefs around money. It's not like a crayon box with like 250 crayons in it. It's like, we're talking about 5 crayons and we're all coloring with the same ones, which is like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not good at it. Men are better at it. I'm not sure. And who am I?
Well, let's just spell a little of that right now, because you're right. And the reason that we all think that way is because that's how we've been educated. So articles that are written, traditionally articles that are written for us about money, tell us how to be good savers and that investing is scary. But articles that are written for men tell them how to invest and grow their wealth, right? Okay, so let's talk about where the reality is. The reality is, a study just came out last week, maybe, that says that 49% of women, almost half, say that they are the chief investment officer in their home. So they are the ones that are taking over the control of money. So more and more women are stepping up to the plate to take control of money. So the old myth that the man is the one who does all of this is changing, and it's changing quickly. That number was 41% just a couple of years ago. And COVID actually had an impact in bringing more women into reality with their money. The other thing to know is that according to McKinsey & Company, we are in one of the greatest wealth transfers that has ever taken place in this country before. Women are going to go from controlling $10 million in this economy, $10 trillion with a T dollars in this economy to $30 trillion, which is a significant, if not close to majority amount of the total money by 2030, which is 6 years away. So because we are earning more, because our husbands, spouses are dying earlier than us, because parents are leaving money to their children, we are accumulating more and more wealth, which means that we have an opportunity to rethink all the messages we've been given around how the economy works and what we should be investing in. We do not have to play this game the men's way. We can create our own way. We can, as one of our colleagues says, create a new table. If we want to sit at the table, we don't necessarily have to just sit at the old table. We can create a new table. The other thing is a great study that was done by Fidelity, looked at 5 million accounts over a 10-year period. I believe I got that right. And they found that women outperformed men consistently by at least 40 basis points a year, which over time really adds up, right? So all of that stuff we're told, not true, not true, not true.
Thank you for bringing that up. And I feel like you also have this, the perspective of seeing how things have really changed over time in terms of like gender gap, pay. I don't know that I got this exactly right, but I think it wasn't until like the 80s that women could get a credit card without having like a male signatory. And it's like, wait, I was born in the 80s, so it doesn't feel like it was that long ago, where it wasn't just what's written in the magazine articles, even though that's really important. There was also a lot of system and structure in place to let women know that they shouldn't be trusted and that you need to have a man on board. And if they're not signing off on this, no one's just going to give you a loan or a mortgage or whatever. So I'd love to just hear your commentary on that.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, one of the things that I was doing for Investor Better for a while is we put out a newsletter every couple of weeks, and I was interviewing women who are members of our community and talked to one woman who's in her 60s who lives in Georgia, I think it was. And we were talking about this, and she said, it wasn't until 1989 here. So in some parts of that she could get a bank account on her own. So in some parts of the country, it was a little earlier in the 80s, but in other parts, it wasn't until almost the 1990s that women could get a bank account on their own. I mean, that's shocking.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
It is.
And I think it's so important for young women to understand, young women who grew up with a reality of, well, this is just how the world is, and this is the rights that women have. It was not that long ago that we didn't have them. And don't ever think that these rights can't be taken away from us. They can. And we do not want to go back to that world. Trust me. Sometimes it brings me almost to tears to see what young women are doing today. I mean, they are entering into realms and salaries that were unthinkable when I was their age. Unthinkable. It's so amazing to see, and it makes me so proud of young women, because I know that women like me and other women my age, we went through a lot. I used to say I have a lot of friggin' arrows in my back, a lot of arrows. And you know what? It was worth it on a personal level, but it cost me a lot. But it is really worth it to know that by doing that, and all the women like me who did, that we have paved a way for those women who came after us to have an easier way. It just makes me proud.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's put some numbers to that. When you entered corporate America, what was a good salary?
$17,000 a year. That was one of my first salaries as a programmer in 1981. $17,000 a year. And it was a good salary. Good salary.
Good. And like, now, what would be the equivalent to it today? Do you have a sense for that?
What people are making in the tech world now, walking into the tech world, making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year. That was $17,000 in 1981. I made good money, good money. But the tech world back then was not what it was today. There weren't even personal computers when I started. When I started as a programmer, I was using punch cards and technology that people don't even remember ever existed. I loved it. Yeah. It was massively fun. But yeah, it would be a couple hundred thousand dollar salary today, probably.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
And the other thing you hear about a lot in the tech world is people who got early shares and then companies went public and it's all of a sudden you're an overnight millionaire. Is that something that you personally experienced or that you witnessed folks around you experiencing during your career?
It is absolutely something that I witnessed. I didn't experience it, and I'll explain why. And then I'm going to tell you about a book that I would recommend. Well, actually, I'll tell you about the book first. So it's a book by a woman named Jen Risher, and it's called We've Got to Talk About Money. And it's her story of herself and her husband who met at Microsoft back in the 80s, did well there, and then her husband left Microsoft to go become one of the first people who worked for Amazon. So she talks about what it is like and what it was like for her to go from being basically very middle class to all of a sudden being pretty ultra wealthy. And what that journey was like and what they went through. So for people who are interested in that kind of journey, she's written about it. What happened for me was actually quite interesting and unexpected. So as I mentioned, I started my career in 1981. In 1995, 14 years later, I was a vice president at a startup company working in something called the CD-ROM and multimedia industry. And I decided to leave that job and decided that it was time for me to take an extended journey. I had always been a big traveler, and I decided I'm going to go backpacking. So I took a solo backpacking trip through sub-Saharan Africa. I left in February of 1995. I came back in July of that year, about that time frame. When I was in Africa, I saw poverty like I had never seen it before. And I made a decision that I was going to figure out a career that enabled me to go back and work in Africa and work on poverty alleviation. When I returned from that trip, the CD-ROM industry was over. And something called the internet had happened. In literally the time I was gone, everyone I knew was riding the internet train. I was well positioned to be an executive in a startup. I'd already been an executive in a startup, but I had made this huge decision in my life. And so what I ended up doing was I shifted my career. It took me about a year to figure it out. So I was a consultant in the dot-com world. I worked for some of the earliest online travel websites as a consultant, did other consulting work. But after about a year, I figured out a way to craft a career that allowed me to look at the role that technology and business thinking could bring to poverty alleviation. And that's what I did for the next 20 some years. And I got very involved in something called microfinance, which is giving small loans to women in developing countries to bring them out of poverty. And we started looking at the role that tech could play in that industry to really scale it. And that inquiry led to something called mobile money, which was the use of the mobile phone as a bank for the poor. And when I left, so when I started in microfinance, about 100 million people were being served. And when I left the mobile money industry, over a billion poor people had access. A billion people in the world had access then to mobile money.
That's incredible. Yeah.
It was a phenomenal experience, to say the least.
Yeah, it reminds me of, one of my favorite organizations that not only I, but other people in my family, like we gift each other, is Kiva.org. If someone gives you $25, you basically get to give a microloan and you get to see the person and hear what they want to use it for. And then they pay it back and then you get to re-give it. And so it's fun because now I've been doing it over the years. And so it's like I'm constantly recycling that money. And it just, it's really beautiful. And it sounds like that's kind of what you were in the early stages of building.
It was fabulous. I mean, I know Kiva well. I was one of their very earliest people on their advisory board when they first kicked out. So I was very involved in that kind of work and then got very involved in how to help mobile phone companies and banks implement big mobile money businesses in their countries. And I worked with governments around the world to help them set up the policies for those kinds of businesses as well. So yeah, it was really a brand new thing and it was fascinating.
Yeah. So what was it about what you were seeing related to money and maybe even like the way that you felt about money and thought about money and what was working for you that you didn't see other women doing? Because you decided to write a book and then you're giving a lot of time and have built a lot of infrastructure around bringing women to the investment table. And it sounds like helping to increase financial literacy with women. So what do you think that you had, either yourself personally or that you had access to that other women were missing?
So what happened was because of the work that I started doing that I just described to you, I was, without knowing it, a social entrepreneur. I was doing work that was both seeking a financial return at the same time that it was seeking to do good in the world, right?
Yeah.
And as a result of that, I lived in the Bay Area. I told you I telecommuted for 20 years. So I worked all over the world, but always based out of the Bay Area. And so I got involved in what became, after the .com, the first bubble blew up and a lot of the people who, as you said, walked away, like not only millionaires, but very high net wealth people. You had all of these primarily men, young men who had just had amazing success in business, were way too young and energetic to walk away from doing things in the world. And they started looking at this question of how could we use our money to do good and do well? And it became known as impact investing. And a lot of those conversations took place here in the Bay Area. And I had the privilege of being involved in them. Even though I was not a high net wealth individual myself, I was involved because of the work that I was doing and the people I worked with. And about 15 years ago, at a conference that was having this kind of conversation, full of people who were ultra high net wealth, foundations, institutional investors, multilateral organizations like the World Bank, etc., I stood up and said, what would it take for somebody who is not a high net wealth individual, just an average person, what would it take for them to be able to invest this way? And the room was, you could hear a pin drop. Nobody said a word. I think they were stunned that I even asked such a question. It was so out of line with what was going on there. And I made a decision in that moment, I am going to figure out how to do this with my own money. I made these huge changes in my career. I walked away from possibly, who knows, what I could have done in their business. I walked away from that to make a difference with my life. How can I have my money invested in the very things that are creating the problems that I'm trying to solve? So I found some financial advisors because I was working very hard at that time, and I had them work to help me. Well, over the 15 years, wasn't quite that long, over the next decade, I had three different financial advisors. None of them got me where I wanted to be. And when I retired from my last career, I decided to take my money back and start really figuring this out. And when I did that, I realized we have come a long way and we're at a point where anyone can invest this way, whether they're accredited or not, it doesn't matter. And women want to. 85% of women want to. We care about how our money is invested, right? We really care. And nobody was helping us. And so I decided I'm going to write a book for women to help them get smarter about their money and to help them understand that, yes, you can. Yes, you can invest. Yes, you can grow your wealth. And yes, you can do it in a way where you can be, to use your word, joyous. You can actually know that your money is building the future that you want for yourself, your children, and your grandchildren. And so for me, it was really being part of that milieu and then having my own aha moment and then putting my effort behind making the change. And so I am well on my way to having all of my assets aligned with my values. I just did a deal in real estate that I'm really excited about that's going to result in some workforce housing in Portland, Oregon. And I've gotten involved in private investing, which I didn't even know was a thing that I could do until I started really digging into this stuff myself.
That's incredible. And I love the example that you just gave. I wonder, are there other examples you can share, maybe not from your own portfolio, but the women who are part of Invest for Better? What kinds of moves are they making? Where are some of the places that they're putting their money?
So you can do this across asset classes. And that's in my book. The middle part of the book actually goes asset class by asset class and explains how it works and then how you can move your money. So you start with your cash. That's where I started. Where's your checking and savings account? If it's in a big bank, you don't know what they're doing with your money, and chances are you wouldn't like it. So we talk about how you can move your money into smaller local financial institutions. I just put some of my money, some of my savings into a financial institution in Florida that is giving loans to people to purchase EVs, to purchase solar panels, to do other things like that. There are women-only banks. There are Black-led banks. There are Native American Indian banks. There's all kinds of banks. So that's one relatively easy thing to do, particularly if you focus first on your savings. Checking can be a little harder depending on what your needs are from a bank, but savings are easy, right? Took me 10, 15 minutes to open a new account at this bank that I just mentioned. So that's one thing.
A little PSA in there, I think that the customer service is so much better at smaller local banks as well. It's phenomenally better.
You are 100% right on that. So cash, that's the one thing, right? Fixed income, you can look at muni bonds. There's a lot of options you can have in that market. There are funds that are more values aligned, either around environmental issues or around gender issues or around social issues, etc. In the stock market, there is a huge swath of options. And there are some great online tools you can use to get a sense of how your investment rates across a variety of different values, like, is it supporting weapons and gun manufacturers? Is it supporting the tobacco industry? How in the oil and gas industry is it? How good is it doing on gender? So there are great tools there. In the stock market, you can either choose funds that are very broad market funds that track the S&P 500 or that track the Russell 1000, many of those. You can also pick more vertical ETFs in areas like clean water or affordable housing or timber, other kinds of things that may be of interest to you. So the stock market is full of opportunity. Then if you have the assets and the interest and you want to get into private investing, that just is huge, right? That just opens up enormously, whether you want to be an angel investor, which I have done, which is super fun, but takes time, or whether you want to invest in funds. And there's private debt opportunities, there's private equity opportunities, all kinds of stuff there. And then if you have the assets and you want, you can think about things like real estate or agriculture or timber or just anything really. that you want. I just was seeing something the other day about how to invest in crypto with a social conscience. I didn't read that. I didn't have time to read it. I'll go back and read it. But so everything is more and more things are possible across what you own.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. Cause I just find that even just these little, they feel like seeds being planted. You know, it's like it opens up my mind to new possibilities that I hadn't considered. And I think the same is true for everyone listening. It's like, as you were sharing that, it's like, okay. There are so many things that we don't necessarily think about, but just with small changes, we can still earn a great ROI. We can have our money making money for us. And then it's also having the byproduct of supporting issues that we care about as well.
So I was just going to say my book gives specific examples of investments. I don't endorse any of them, but I give specific examples. We teach people about specific examples in Invest for Better. In fact, one of the courses we have, it's kicking off in March, is a three-part course that's being taught by a financial advisor and an environmental investment expert. And it's about how do you pick investments that are going to get us to a sustainable environment? How do you do that? So we give very specific examples, and that course is open. And our courses are crazy inexpensive. It's only like $100 to take that course from an expert, because we don't want people to not do this because they're afraid of paying a fee, right? So yeah. We give those. And I also want to call out a website called Ask Sustainable, which is listing different options that you have. So there are more and more resources available to find these kinds of investments. It doesn't have to be hard, and it can actually be really fun and engaging, particularly when you are in a room with other women talking about this and sharing ideas.
Yeah. So for everyone listening, if they want to connect more with you, Janine, or if they want to learn about Invest for Better, where should they go?
So go to our website, investforbetter.org. You can contact me at jfirpo, which is J-F-I-R-P as in Peter O, at investforbetter.org. And you can also find my book, Activate Your Money, on any site that sells books.
So as we sort of wrap up this conversation, I always like to ask, for you personally, what does it look like and what does it feel like to be on your joyous path to millions?
Wow. I love knowing that my money is out there doing good things in the world. I get emails from my banks telling me the impact that the work is having. I have hired a financial advisor now who is buying individual bonds for me. She gives me reports that show me how that money is having an impact. The private things that I do, I'll give you an example. I supported a woman in my neighborhood who was raising money for a bagel shop. It doesn't sound like it's a big deal, but she was a former engineer. She had this passion and this vision. She wanted to do this, and no one would give her money. No one would give her money because she's a woman. Women trying to get money, whether it's equity for a business, only 2% of female CEOs in this country. No, I'm saying that wrong. Of all the venture capital expended in this country in the last year, only 2% went to female CEOs.
Yeah.
Can't get money. They can't get equity. They can't get debt. So she was trying to raise $100,000 to start this business. I gave her $7,500. It wasn't a huge amount of money. I stayed in touch with her. I learned about what she was doing. This woman has rocked it. I mean, she has, not only is her bagel location successful, she's now built a factory. She's got her bagels in stores all over. She is doing so well. She's hiring people. I love that. I just mentioned a real estate deal in Portland. I helped two women who are real estate developers, and they are a rare breed, start on their dream of building affordable housing and workforce housing. This stuff makes me really happy. It makes me feel proud of what my money is doing. And I just want to share that with other women. It really is the difference between regular finance, which is a cake, and a cake with icing. This kind of investing is the icing on the cake. It really is. And Amazing. It's like, why would you eat a cake without icing? It's the best part.
Amazing. Truly. Well, I know that you've inspired me, and that probably inspired so many others. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing and for advocating. and educating all of us on all of these possibilities. Janine, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. And to everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. I hope you loved that conversation with Janine as much as I did. I'm always just so grateful when women like her are willing to just share their knowledge and their expertise and their unique take and the things that they're doing in the world. It just is so inspiring to me. You know, at this point, she just works pro bono and does all of this to make the planet better, essentially. So Janine does not hang out on Instagram. So, you know, that's my favorite spot. So if you're listening, you can share there and tag me at MMakesMoney. But if you want to tag Janine and let her know that you listened, LinkedIn would be the best place to do that. Here are my top takeaways. Number one, recognizing the history of women with money. And, you know, that it wasn't that long ago that we didn't have a lot of the same rights that men did. And so really acknowledging how far we've come. Number two, being grateful for the opportunities that we do have today, and also asking how we can make them better, how we can give women more opportunities and help women feel more capable of managing money and having financial opportunities. And this is for men too, right? Because you have a mom, you have a wife, you have children, you have daughters. Like, we want to make this more equitable and help women feel empowered because it helps everyone. Number three was so interesting that women are going to control $3 trillion, I think she said, by like within the next 2 years. So that's really incredible. We're getting the financial power, but our mindset isn't necessarily there. We still are holding on to old money wounds. Many of them are generational. So that's my shameless plug for money wound medicine, because when you do that deep work of diagnosing and healing your money wounds, permanently healing them, and then alchemizing those wounds into wealth, it just opens you up to so many more possibilities to build wealth and to have your money make money for you. So I don't teach you any specific investment techniques, but none of your investment techniques work when you hold on to limiting beliefs that are just running below the surface and running behind the scenes and keeping you feeling small, stuck, safe, but not wealthy. Number four, that fidelity study that she mentioned, that women investors actually do better. I thought that was so wonderful to hear and something that I'm going to file away so that I can continue to improve my identity around myself as an investor, and that women actually do better. So we should be investing our money and we should be making those moves. And then number five, asking ourselves the question, how can my money make money for me and do good at the same time? And Janine opened my eyes to so many possibilities. I had a lot of aha moments just hearing her talk. And frankly, there were a lot of questions that I haven't been asking myself. And it's really such an interesting inquiry to think about the ways in which our money is invested, even just through different financial institutions or different stock market funds. And I love that she brought awareness to it. And I hope that you'll join me in taking action on asking those questions and putting our money in places where it's also doing good and aligning to our own values. So as always, thank you so much for tuning into today's show. Likes, subscribe, share, and tune in next week. I'll talk to you soon. Listeners like you have made this a top 3% global podcast. So thank you so much for tuning in. Please like, subscribe, share, and leave a review. I also love hearing listener feedback, so feel free to slide into my DMs on Instagram at MMakesMoney. If you would like to explore hiring me as your money healer and business mentor, hit the link in the show notes or head to explore.emilywilcox.com. Until next time, I'm sending you all the magic money vibes on your joyous path to millions.